Welcome to the Open Adoption Project. This is episode 110. We're the Nelsons. I'm Sean.
And I'm Lynette. And we're excited to be here with another podcast episode.
Yeah, it has been a little bit of time.
Yeah. We've had a couple of like promo episodes where we talked about the substance exposure guide and we talked about that research for birth mothers.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since we've done an episode with the two of us too.
Yeah. So. Life's been a little busy.
Yeah. I started a PhD program, and of course our kids have school, and we have work, and stuff's busy, but good.
Lots of fun stuff. But today, we're happy to be talking about family communication patterns. This is something that Lynette has studied a little bit as she's beginning her PhD and did some research over the summer, and we thought that because there are a lot of really important takeaways and connections to communications and relationships and adoption, that this would be a helpful episode for us to have.
Yeah, honestly, as I've learned about family communication patterns, it's been so helpful for me as an adoptive parent, and I just thought this could be helpful for others as well.
Yeah. When you say family communication patterns, what do you mean?
So family communication patterns are basically what help us understand how family structures during childhood will impact adulthood.
So family structures like the way that we parent or...
So no, it's more like the way that your family during childhood communicates about things, right? Like the conversation around things, what your parents expect of you. Like, do they expect you to obey them without question? Or is it more loose than that? It's, yeah, what the communication patterns in your family of origin were like.
Cool.
Yeah. So these family communication patterns began to be studied back in the 1970s. I think it's really interesting. There were two researchers. Their names were McLeod and Chaffee, I think. And they developed this model for family communication patterns when they were trying to describe families' tendencies to develop predictable and stable ways of communicating with each other. But they weren't really trying to look at family communication. That wasn't their goal. They were actually mass media researchers, and they were trying to explain how families create a shared social reality.
Okay.
So this came out of that effort and has actually been really helpful for family studies.
Good. So what's maybe the goal of, you know, understanding these communication styles?
Yeah. So the goal is really to explain how families create and share a social reality, right? So particularly how parents socialize their children, how they help them process information. So I can see you're looking a little glazed over, Sean. Do I need to find a way to make this more...
No, you're like, good.
...accessible? Okay. So ultimately, this family communication pattern theory, I think, is also super applicable to adoptive families, so we're going to talk about it a little bit more here. There's two different elements of family communication patterns, and I think we mentioned this earlier. There's conformity orientation, and there's conversation orientation.
So conformity is kind of how... Like, I'm thinking as a parent, like, if I have, like, rules in my home and how I'm expecting my children to follow those rules, or when if I have, like, a path for my child and do I let them, you know, waver from that path?
Is it yeah, kind of like yeah, that? It's kind of like that. That's pretty close. So it can range from low to high, right? And so if you have low conformity, that means you're not expecting your children to follow that path or, like, conform with your expectations. And if you have high conformity, then you do have these expectations that your children will conform with what you're wanting for them.
And alone, is there one that's better than another?
So conformity is kind of tricky because there are such big cultural differences, right? Like if you go to Eastern cultures, high conformity is the norm in families, right? Like you need to obey what your parents tell you without question, like, and follow this path, and that's just a cultural expectation. And so it's hard to divide between like what is best because there's such big cultural differences. And I've found mixed research for Western cultures as well. Like, okay. I'm not really sure which one's better. I think it's probably best to be a little bit in the middle personally, but that is not a research quote. Yeah. That's my opinion from what I've read.
I mean, I think of like both extremes, right, where you have like almost boot camp like parenting style, or far on the opposite side is like super free range parenting, where you just kind of like let your kids do whatever you want. And I'm like, myself, like somewhere in the middle feels like maybe the comfortable or the right place to be.
Yeah, and I can't say that for sure again, but there's going to be more harmony in a home where there's more conformity, right? And there's going to be more independence in a home where there's lower conformity. And I think there's good in both of those. So having some kind of balance is probably, in my opinion, what's best.
Okay. So when we're talking about family communication patterns, we're looking at conformity, but also conversation. So when it comes to conversation, what are like maybe the opposites of the pendulum? Well, similar to what we just talked about.
Yeah. So conversation orientation is this other side of communication patterns, right? And it's how often and how open conversations are in your home.
About anything.
Yeah. Like conversations in your home. Can you tell your parents anything? Can you tell your parents, hey, I got really crazy today and stole a candy bar? I don't know. Like, can you tell them these
really
things
crazy.
As like a safe thing? I can't think of a good example. But is that a safe thing to talk about whatever? Or maybe your parents are of one political ideology, and as you develop in adolescence, you begin thinking that you have different political beliefs than your parents. Can you talk about that? Are your parents going to be okay with that? Or maybe you start questioning the faith that your parents have. Is that a safe thing to talk to them about? Or are they going to get defensive and angry?
Okay. So, I mean, I'm thinking about this in my own childhood. And even within our own home, I think I had different conversation patterns with different parents.
Yeah.
Right? Like for me, I could pretty much tell my mom everything. And I wasn't afraid of how she would react most of the time. But it was very much different with my dad. And I kind of think of, when we're thinking about conformity, I feel like my dad's perspective was like high conformity. He literally was a Marine, right? And that lifestyle was very kind of regimented.
Like structure, yeah.
Yeah, and my mom was a little bit more, I don't know, laissez-faire about it, like just kind of letting things happen.
Laissez-faire. Have you been looking ahead in my notes?
I mean, it's a good descriptor.
But yeah, that's interesting. I don't think I've seen any research about parents having different communication patterns within the same family. It's generally classified as like
the home.
The home. And so that's an interesting take. I'm not exactly sure what that would look like, but it's a really good conversation starter. I'll have to look into that some more. I'll come back here and talk more about it if I find something about that.
Okay.
But yeah, so conversation and conformity are these two different orientations in family communication patterns.
So I have this graphic in front of me that kind of helps me see this, the range of different levels of conformity compared to the levels of conversation. So like on the x-axis, we have conformity, and it ranges from low conformity to high conformity. And then on the y-axis, or across the bottom, we have conversation, and from the left, from low to high, right?
Yeah, so there's four different communication patterns that families usually fall into. And so if you're picturing the X and the Y axis,
you almost just have quadrants, right? So one with high conformity, high conversation, high conformity, low conversation, and then low conformity, low conversation, and low conformity, low or high. Yeah.
So low conversation, high conformity, that would be a protective family.
So in a protective family, we have like following all the rules and no real room for question. And so what would that look like in an adoption, like relationship in a home?
I think that would be like, you are trying to protect your child from these hard conversations, right? And so you don't talk about them, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't talk about adoption at all, and you do what your adoptive parents tell you because they're trying to like kind of keep you in a bubble.
Okay. So right. As an adoptive parent, if I'm in this protected class, so high conformity, low conversation, I'm probably not bringing up like, how do you feel about your adoption, or even talking about it much at all.
Yeah, probably not. So yeah, there's just, it's such an emphasis on obedience and not an emphasis on dialogue.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
So then we also have, maybe on the lower conversation and low conformity, kind of just this more lax
laissez-faire
culture or pattern in the home. Tell us a little bit about that, and let's talk about how that might look in the adoption situation.
Yeah, so that would be really autonomous kids. There's not really any like expectation that they're going to follow the parents' paths, but there's also not an open dialogue. And children in this pattern do struggle. They often have what's called the lost child role, where they'll struggle with self-regulation and feel like they don't matter.
Mm. So in the adoption sphere, right? So again, this is low conversation and kind of low conformity. Mm-hmm. What would that look like?
I mean, that'd be kind of sad. It's a sad role, right? It's when you don't talk about adoption, but your adoptive parents wouldn't really care about like helping you adjust, right? Or like if you're struggling with something, you're not going to talk about it and they're not really going to have expectations. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So this is probably like the least favorable.
It's kind of a all disconnected. The situations. Yeah, it's very disconnected. And yeah, I feel sad that this is a pattern at all.
Okay. So maybe on the other side, now thinking about a little bit more increasing the conversation, right? So we have high conversation. And what about the high conversation but low conformity? This, mm-hmm. yeah, what does that look like?
So it's a pluralistic family. And that's where parents would have open and honest conversation, and families are characterized by like this plurality of opinions. There's free flowing ideas. You can talk about things openly, honestly. It's a very, I feel like it's a very like modern familial pattern, right?
Okay.
It's what a lot of families have now, I think.
So what would you say, I think that's good. What would you say thinking about adoption, maybe some of the pros and cons of that?
Yeah. So of course, every adoptee has different experiences. We've talked to lots of adoptees and I never want to like put them all into one box, right?
Because yeah, for
everyone
sure.
has such different experiences. But we have talked with some people who were adopted who felt like they never belonged in either of their families.
Yeah.
And that could be a pitfall of being in a pluralistic family where the low conformity could present itself as a challenge if you don't feel like
this is how we do things
there's a
in
place
our family.
For you. And then there's not really like a place for you. Yeah.
Okay.
But there is high conversation too.
Which is healthy.
That's healthy. I feel like, yeah, I'm not exactly sure because research isn't sure, right? Which conformity is better. If it's better to have a high conformity or low conformity family. Again, like we said, I think in
probably somewhere in the middle
is probably better. But that is something I'd be careful about, making sure that your child knows that you like love them with your all, they belong with you, and they belong with their birth family too. And it's like a dual citizenship in these two families, right? But making sure that it's not so chill that there's that alienation potential. Yeah.
Okay. So let's now, we're still talking about high conversation now, which we're fans of. We want to be really open, especially with our children and talking about it goes back to some other conversations we've had in the past about communicative openness, just making sure that our home is a safe place for whatever feelings to be shared, whatever conversation needs to be had, that nothing has like a stigma to it or that they're worried about approaching us to talk about anything. So
yeah,
I think that's great. So we're talking about that higher conversation. Now, what about in the home where we have a little bit more high conformity?
Mm-hmm. So those families are called consensual in the family communication pattern theory. So consensual families use both conversation and conformity to habitually achieve a shared reality.
Break that down for me.
Okay. So you have open dialogue. You can share whatever, but you also have these high expectations. You're going to have parents who are a little bit more like authoritative.
Okay.
Hopefully not authoritarian, but
maybe
authoritative,
a little more type A.
Or maybe, but parents are going to be clear that they expect children to follow a certain path, right? But they also want to hear what their children are thinking and feeling.
Okay.
And so I feel like, again, there's benefits here and there are potential drawbacks, right? If high conformity is taken to an extreme, I feel like that can be just as unhealthy as a low conformity. And so,
okay.
Yeah, just trying to walk that line of what what's best here. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm liking this. I think that I'm kind of conceptually getting this. I mean, as I'm thinking about this, we want to have a conversation high. And when we're thinking about conformity, I personally am finding somewhere in the middle where I want to kind of have a path for my child, but also give a little bit of autonomy. Mm-hmm. So that...
Well, and it's good for children to have independence. Yeah. That should grow as they mature.
But not so much that they feel less part of our family, mm-hmm. or less direction.
Or less identity. Yeah.
Good. Okay, so I know that we've kind of just been talking about this in theory a little bit, and maybe considering how it might look like adoption-wise, but is there other examples?
I like looking at movies and pop culture to get examples, because then we're not, like, throwing anyone under the bus, analyzing how they parent or how patterns look in their home, because movies, you know, are fictional. And so I like that.
So I know, for those of you who don't know, one that is a big Harry Potter nerd, and I say that with a lot of respect.
Thank you. Oh, respect. Nice.
She loves the books, maybe not the movies as much, but they're pretty common in our culture. So maybe is there anything from Harry Potter that we could learn?
That's interesting. I've thought about this, actually. So I feel like Harry is raised by his uncle and aunt, right? Mm-hmm. Petunia and Vernon. And I feel like they're protective, which sounds weird. I would think they'd be like the laissez-faire because they're the worst, right? But I think that they're also protective because they want Harry to act like a muggle. They want him to conform to their norms. They don't want him to tap into any of his magical blood or whatever. I don't know. They want him to fit with them, even though it's not in a loving way, right? It's
okay.
Toxic.
Okay, I get
but
that.
But yeah, they want to like shelter him basically from himself.
But their conversation is not there.
They
right?
didn't they even just, tell him how his parents died. Yeah, they told him they died in a car crash. And yeah, they don't have a conversation at all. They, like, Harry doesn't know he's magical or anything until the books.
Right.
So yeah, I feel like he actually is raised in a protective home, which sounds weird.
And we've kind of established that maybe that's not the best atmosphere for raising an adoptee. So if you find yourself being the Uncle Vernon or Aunt Petunia parent, then it may be time to reconsider why we're doing the way we're doing things.
Yeah, absolutely.
are there any other examples?
Of protective families. Okay, I think Mulan is an example. And I'm thinking of the cartoon. I don't think I've seen the new one all the way through.
Yeah.
I've seen part of it, but I'm not sure exactly what the family communication pattern looks like in that one. But in the 90s cartoon, it's definitely protective, right? Like, Mulan doesn't talk with her parents about what she plans to do, but they're trying to keep her protected and keep her conforming with their culture and the norms and expectations of their society. So I think that's protective.
Okay.
Frozen, that's one of our daughter's favorite when she was little.
For sure.
And I think that one's a classic protective parent example, right? Because Anna and Elsa's parents find out that Elsa has this gift and it's like a curse in the beginning,
and
right?
They literally lock her in a room.
Yeah, they like shut down. There's no conversation. There's no human contact. Like, they want to protect everybody so much that they go to these extreme measures trying to literally protect. So I think they're a protective family too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other examples?
I mean, I think of like the Von Trapp family on The Sound of Music, right?
Literally have like whistle and they'd line up.
Yeah. Conformity wise. Very high conformity. Yeah. Like, very regimented. And not any dialogue before Maria comes to the family. So
she does change it up.
And of course, I've heard also that movie is not really true to the true story. But in the movie, she changes it up. So.
Okay. So we talked, that's a little bit about like the protective. So that's low conversation and high conformity. What about the high conformity and the high conversation?
Consensual families. All right. I think that there's some Pixar movies that fall into this category. I think like the movie Brave.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So especially in the beginning, it might shift a little and become a little more pluralistic in the end. But in Brave, Merida, is that her name?
I think so.
Yeah. Merida is expected to conform, especially by her mother. This might be a good example of what you were talking about with your parents having different levels and different patterns. But her mother expects her to do what she needs to do, just like she did when she was young, right?
Yeah.
But they have conversation, and Merida feels safe saying, like, I don't want to do this. I'm not happy about this. Yeah. She doesn't feel like she's going to be punished. I can picture
her, like, throwing herself on her bed, but still talking to her mom through the harder conversation.
Yeah, and she feels safe doing that. And so I think that's an example. And then another example I can think of is The Incredibles. And we love The Incredibles. It's one of my favorite movies to watch with my kids. But there's this family culture where they are superheroes, right? And so that is the culture of the family. Everyone, like, adheres to this culture and the expectations there. Although it is a little chill with Jack-Jack, right? Because at first he's not a superhero. And they don't know he has powers, and it doesn't seem to matter. But they still, like, they expect their kids to behave a certain way and, like, follow this superhero code of wearing their mask and being secretive and whatever, right? But they also have their open conversations. The parents have the final say, but they can talk about things.
Okay. So we've talked about protective. That's more of the Harry Potter stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, with, yeah, Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia. Then we have consensual. I like the Incredibles.
Yeah, that's the one that stuck out to you.
That's going to stick with me. Okay, so then we have, which one do you want to talk about next?
Let's talk about pluralistic. We'll save the sad one
for
last.
So high conversation and low conformity.
Yeah.
What examples in movies?
So I think a lot of more modern movies kind of aim for this, right? Like Paddington, I think, is a good example because, like, Mr. Brown and Mrs. Brown, they have definite open dialogue with their kids, but they're also pretty chill and lenient, right? Like, their kids don't have to, like, check any boxes or, I don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that might shift a little bit, but I feel like they're a pluralistic family. I haven't seen this movie in ages, but I'm also thinking of Alexander and the Terrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, right? That was a great book. And I vaguely remember the movie. I feel like that family would also fit into that category, but I'm a little rusty.
No, I think I watched it with the kids. Maybe
it's been a while. Ago, yeah. Beezus and Ramona. I feel like that one's another one. Like, there's this conversation in the movie where the family's talking about how Ramona has poor grades, and then she gets mad and says she wants to say a bad word, and her parents aren't, like, stopping her, and they're not, like, throwing a fit about her grades, right? And then she wants to say her bad word, and it's guts, and they all just laugh. And it's like a funny scene, right? But I think that they're a pluralistic family where they are low conformity, but the conversation is totally there. Everybody's okay sharing whatever they need to share.
Okay. And then our last category, you call it the sad category, the laissez-faire one, where we have low conversation, low conformity, or low structure.
Yeah, and I feel like this one, even though it's a very unhealthy pattern, I feel like it's portrayed in media a lot.
A lot.
I can think of quite a few. So maybe a lot of the 80s movies would fall into this category, right? Like E.T., there's a family that's not super connected seeming, very hands-off parenting. Like, there's an alien living in their house, and
I feel like that
nobody
was like
knows.
The 80s. That was like my life.
Laissez-faire, yeah. But, like, no one knows that there's an alien in the house for, like, days, right?
Yeah, that's true.
It's weird. no one talks about it. Or, like, the Goonies. The parents are all, like, in their own world and don't notice that their kids are on this weird pirate hunt.
Touché.
And they never seem to find out, right? Did they find out in the end?
The very end.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like 80s movies fall into laissez-faire often.
Anything more
The
recent?
Movie Matilda, I like Matilda. That was one of my favorite books when I was a kid. The adoption storyline in Matilda is terrible, but it's a funny movie. And her parents in that story get mad at Matilda because she reads and she wants to learn and go to school, and she doesn't want to watch TV with them, right?
Yeah.
And so that is, I guess maybe that's high conformity.
It might be.
Yeah, I was second guessing
Matilda.
They're
like, sit down and watch this TV show.
You must watch TV. You cannot read.
Yeah. So that's
maybe
a good example.
Maybe she's not laissez-faire. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are probably aspects of that family.
Because they don't care, too. But they do care enough that they don't want her reading.
Yeah. I mean, they're, like, leaving her at home and she's, like, walking to the library when she's 5 years old.
But then they are getting sent to jail or something. Or the cops are coming and Matilda asks them to sign some adoption papers for her to go.
And they just sign it.
And they just sign it. Like,
yeah.
It's not a big thing. So I'm not sure what they are. They're a weird family. And then the most adoption pertinent example I can think of for laissez-faire, I don't know how many people will have seen this, but there's a Disney Channel show that was from a few years ago called Jessie.
Oh, yeah.
And we watched that for a little bit. The parents are tragically disengaged from their children.
I don't even remember what they... Were they even in an episode?
They're in episodes, but not very many. And Jessie is like the nanny, and then the butler. They're like the parental figures, and they're not good parental figures at all. But this is an adoptive family, right? The oldest child is a biological child, and then there's three adopted children after. And one of them is like a recent adoptee from a different country. And the oldest child is always like trying to please her parents. I think she has that lost child role. I think it's a textbook example of laissez-faire parenting. And I think it's really sad because they're also adoptive parents. but yeah, and they call it out in the pilot episode. The nanny like talks to the parents about how they need to be more present, which is ironic because then there's tons of episodes and they're not in any of them.
Okay.
But yeah, so okay. I think those examples help me conceptualize where these patterns, like what they look like in different family circles.
Okay. So I'm thinking about a lot of other like mainstream movies. So some of these are adoption movies, right? So like Despicable Me. Our kids love that movie. I think it's because of the minions and they're ridiculous.
That's
but
pretty dumb.
Where would Gru and his parenting fall in these?
Okay, I haven't seen all the new stuff because I just don't dig it. But Gru starts off as a terrible foster dad, right? He has some growth. He becomes a better foster parent. He becomes more protective, more warm. Yeah, I think that he starts off as laissez-faire, and he might stay laissez-faire, but in a warmer way.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
He had a terrible parent, though, like his interactions with his mother. Did you know his mother is Julie Andrews? That's her voice.
No.
I didn't know that either. But yeah, and so,
that's funny.
Yeah, he has a challenging backstory with his own family communication, but I think they're probably laissez-faire.
Okay. What about how, this is another movie that's kind of cringy for me, but Stuart Little?
Stuart Little is one of those movies that I think is really cringy for adoptive parents, but so many kids and adoptees seem to really resonate with it.
Huh.
And I think that might be because as adults, we might be taking it too literally, like at face value. And maybe kids are feeling, right, which is just weird. But I feel like kids might be watching it a little bit, I don't know, like more metaphorically and understanding and resonating with it more. I don't know. Because our kids really enjoy that movie. But Stuart is this mouse who's literally adopted by a wealthy family that has a cat. It's weird, right? Like, why would you adopt a mouse when you have a cat? Anyway. Okay, I feel like the conversation in that family is a little more open. And of course, that's how older child adoptions tend to be anyway, by necessity. So it's maybe hard to gauge what the conversation orientation is, but we'll say it's a little higher. And then their conformity might be a little more abstract. Like it seems like they're trying to accept him as one of them, like as a human in the family, but he's not a human. So it kind of skews it too, right? Because he plays soccer with humans and it's a bad idea. So it's kind of unhealthy conformity. But they might be a consensual family.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Other adoption movies. Meet the Robinsons.
Meet the Robinsons. So as much as I think that's a sweet story, I think it's a little cringy in family communication patterns because Lewis is ultimately adopted by a family that changes his name, like before they even know that they're going to adopt him. Right? They're just like, your name doesn't fit you. Here's a different name. And they seem drawn to him because he's similar to them. I don't know. And like the kind of takeaway of the movie is like he's going to move on and not think about and talk about his birth family. And so I would say that one's probably protective, like high conformity, low conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe the conversation is high on the things that they have like in common. But
maybe, but adoption conversation. Yeah,
yeah,
I think would be low.
Like it's kind of just
so that's protective. Away. So that's protective. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is more pertinent right now because our daughter is in this musical in middle school right now, but Elf.
Oh, Elf. So I think Elf's conversation about adoption is kind of sad too, because Buddy conforms and acts like an elf and doesn't have any conversation at the North Pole with Papa Elf, right? Like, he is an adult when he learns that he's not technically an elf, that he was adopted, and then he begins his search. So I would say that one's protective, right?
Yeah, for sure. Kind of shut up in this world that is different than the one.
Yeah. And like, there's no dialogue about it. Like, we not don't talk all. About this, but you're this giant elf who's not. Yeah.
Okay. What about This Is Us, like the TV show?
You know, I feel like we could do so many episodes about This Is Us, but we would need to watch more of it. Okay, we've seen the first couple seasons, but I think that one changes over time, right? Because Rebecca, in childhood, I guess is what we should be focusing on. Rebecca keeps these secrets from Randall, right? Like, she has contact and a relationship with his birth dad.
And he doesn't.
He has no clue. Yeah, which is so sad, but they do address it later. There's like racial tensions that take 40 years for Randall to bring up with his siblings. Jack has some conversations with his kids. That seems like more of an open dialogue, but I don't know. And then Randall like overhears Rebecca talking about her mother's racist behaviors, but they don't seem to have direct conversation, right? So there's like the drama of overhearing things. I think that their culture would be more of the protective culture. But I think that show also illustrates how complex and fluid those patterns are.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, those are obviously a lot of them fictitious, but I think can kind of paint the, I guess it just gives imagery to some of these concepts.
Yeah. Well, and family communication patterns can be so complex. They evolve and change. And I feel like a family might have a pluralistic style when it comes to some things, but then maybe they're more strict and conformity in other things, right? Like, maybe they have one style when they're talking about school and grades and work, right? And then other areas, they have a different style, like with religion or politics. I don't know. I feel like it can be different. And then, like you brought up, it could be different with parents too, if the parents aren't on the same page with how they're parenting and communicating with their children, that could be different on that level too. So it's just complicated.
So some takeaways, as we're thinking about these communication patterns, again, kind of going back to this communicative openness within the home, we want to have high conversation.
Always. That is like super grounded in research, beneficial, important. High conversation.
Check your ego at the door sometimes.
Yeah.
Make sure that you can talk about anything with your children and help them feel safe in talking about anything.
Yeah.
Okay. And then conformity, it's kind of a mixed bag here, right?
Like, I'll let you know if I find more information on that.
But if it's super high conformity, like, I can see some negative things there, and super low conformity also, right? So kind of somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. I imagine that's probably the place to be, but who knows? And maybe different families have different needs. Like, there is some research that shows that different children, based on their genetics, have different parenting needs, right?
Styles.
Like, different styles of parenting will resonate better with different children based on what their genes are. Like, it's determined by your genes. And so when you adopt, it's probably more likely that you're going to have maybe some friction on that because you don't share genes with either of your parents.
Yeah.
So it just adds some complexity and more reasons for us to be researching, educating ourselves, and continually trying to workshop and fine tune how we're parenting and how we're communicating.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So
all right.
That was a really good introduction to this. I feel like I understand a lot more about what you've been studying a little bit lately.
I've been talking to you about it. It made more sense now.
Yeah. Like,
movies help. Yeah. That like really helps me a lot. At least for me. Yeah.
And just kind of seeing the different relationships and environments that all of those kind of characters in those different movies or shows play help kind of paint this picture. But my takeaway today is I want to make sure that I'm increasing conversation, that my kids always feel super, you know, confident in talking to me and you about whatever they need to. And then I'm kind of just going to think more deeply about what type of structures exist. Where am I, like, really type A? Because I know I am, like, check the box, like, this is the way that things need to be. But I know that there's aspects of life where I probably should be a little bit more lacks on conformity. And so
yeah.
I'm just going to, my takeaway here is I need to be thinking about that and how is the way that I'm parenting influencing my adopted child.
I love that. Well, and I feel like adoptees, again, I don't want to put them in a box, but we want to make sure our children feel comfortable and confident being themselves. And that will likely be different from how we are, right?
Yeah.
So we want them to feel comfortable and confident being different from us while also knowing that they belong, right?
Gotcha.
And so it's a fine balance.
So I know in our next episode, we're going to continue talking about this. What can maybe give us the preview? What will the conversation be there?
Yeah. So I'm hoping we can talk about how we can improve our family communication patterns in our homes, how we can improve our conversation, and how we can help make our homes a more safe space and enhance our communication patterns.
Awesome.
Okay.
So thank you so much for listening to this episode. That's been helpful for me. Hopefully this is kind of opening your minds to different ways that we are, you know, cultures in our homes, or if you're don't yet have children, maybe how you want to kind of prepare your future home with children, and what type of structures you want to create.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for being here, and we'll be back soon.